And from Matthew 8:18 through 22. Now when Jesus saw a crowd around him, he gave orders to go over to the other side. And a scribe came and said to him, "Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go." And Jesus said to him, "Foxes have holes, and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head." Another of the disciples said to him, "Lord, let me first go and bury my Father." And Jesus said to him, "Follow me and leave the dead to bury their own dead." You may be seated.
What a blessing it is to be able to gather. I know that some of you had a harder situation than others getting here. I pray that you'll be safe in your return. And we're hearing that there's more snow in the forecast, and it's supposed to be cold throughout the week. So be safe and try to, I guess, enjoy maybe a little slower time at home if you're blessed with that. Remember those who may need a little assistance. And if you need any help from the church, or you have family members who need some help, let us know and we'll try to do what we can to see that their needs are met. We are doing, for those of you who are visiting, by the way, we have several from, I think, from Spring Creek and maybe other congregations who are visiting with us. We're doing this year something called His Word, where we're reading five chapters of the New Testament each week, beginning in Matthew, going through the entire New Testament in this year. And there's a devotional that goes along with that. And so I'll preach on something from that that we've read this past week. And this past week, we've studied Matthew's chapter 6 through 10. And this next week, Lord willing, we'll be doing chapters 11 through 15. And so let me encourage you, if you'd like a book, pick one up out in the foyer and begin reading those chapters. You may, even if you've got behind with the snow, you may have a little chance to catch up. So you make sure you're on schedule. I invite you to turn in your Bible to Matthew chapter 8. And we're going to be looking at actually more than one chapter this evening. If I say morning, that's fine too, because it's kind of like our morning worship. So, but we're going to be looking at some lessons from these chapters. Now, we have been doing a study on Corinthians normally on Sunday morning, and we'll pick that back up next week. And but I thought it'd be better for us to do His Word today. In these three chapters, the word "follow" is found 10 times. And it is a theme of these chapters, as Matthew has grouped together several stories of Jesus, and it seems to be that one of the prominent themes is how do we follow Jesus? And the challenge that it is to follow Jesus. When we consider that thought, when we think about following someone, we tend to like to pick and choose what we follow, what we like about them. For example, all of us, I think to a certain degree, when it comes to our voting and what we have to do with choosing political leaders, have to kind of pick and choose what we want to follow about that leader. We may not agree often with several things that they stand for, but we try our best to pick the one that we want to follow to lead us that we believe identifies with us. But we're pretty comfortable saying, you know, I don't agree with him on this issue. We kind of pick and choose what we like. Or you go to a doctor, or you go to begin a diet and you get a nutritionist, or you get an exercise trainer. Yeah, now we're getting personal, right? And they tell you, now you need to get on this diet. And this is what you need to eat. And this is your regimen. Or this is your regimen for exercise. But we tend to do what? Well, I'm going to follow that leader. But we still do what? Well, I'm going to eat. This is a special meal, so I'm going to have that dessert. Well, this is a special day, so I'm going to skip that exercise. I'm kind of sore from the last time I exercised, so I'm just going to observe the Passover and pass on over this day. Well, we pick and choose what we do. Or maybe we say, I'm going to get my financial health in order, so I want to read Dave Ramsey. And I believe a lot in what Dave Ramsey said and have listened to him for years and read some of his books over the years. And you know, Dave Ramsey tells you a lot of financial stuff, but just about everybody that reads Dave Ramsey, most people do what? They pick and choose. They don't follow everything Dave Ramsey says. They just take his principles and they pick and choose. And I think there, as I thought about this, I thought, you know, all of those things, we're comfortable with that, aren't we? If you told me, you know, Josh, I read a Dave Ramsey book and I'm going to do a lot of the principles, I'm not going to judge you and think harshly of you if you don't do all of them. If you go get a trainer or start a diet program and you get someone who tells you what you should do, and you say, well, you know what, I just think that not every part of that fits me and I'm going to adjust that, I'm not going to think bad of you because you can pick and choose what part you follow. And we all do that with our political leaders. And I think those are the reasons why we struggle then to come to Jesus. Because when Jesus gives us Matthew 5, 6, and 7, the Sermon on the Mount, and then he begins telling us in Matthew 8, 9, and 10 about how we're supposed to follow him, we tend, maybe we don't say it like this, but we tend to pick and choose. We tend to think, Jesus, I like that. That's something I really believe in. And you know what? I'm going to do it, and I'm going to tell other people they should do it. But then we come to another teaching of Jesus, and we don't like it. And it's hard. And we just kind of observe the Passover, and we say, well, I'm going to let that one slide. And so we want to think about, what does it really mean to follow Jesus? Because it really means that we've got to take all of it. And then it involves wholeheartedly following Jesus and not picking and choosing what we follow. Now, let's think about, first of all, this in these chapters that Jesus is constantly calling people to follow him. In fact, let's begin in chapter 8, verses 18 through 22. When Jesus saw a crowd around him, he gave orders to go over to the other side. And the scribe came up to him and said, Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go. It says, I'm going to follow you, Jesus. And Jesus said to him, Foxes have holes, birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. Another of his disciples said to him, Lord, let me first go and bury my father. Jesus said to him, Follow me. Leave the dead to bury their own dead. Jesus is calling us to follow him. In fact, he will call Matthew in these chapters. Look at chapter 9, verses 9 and 10. He passed by Matthew, who was a tax collector sitting in his tax booth, and he says to him, Follow me. He's going to call the laborers. Look at chapter 9, verse 35 through 38. He went throughout all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom and healing every disease and affliction. And when he saw the crowds, he had compassion for them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. And Jesus says to his disciples, The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. The devotional book, he makes the point that really there's a world of lost people. And today we need more people to think about the lost. That all of us need to be evangelists. All of us need to be thinking about the lost. That we have the responsibility of being laborers. You think about in the church how there's always a great need for workers. The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. What is that? That's a call to follow. The call to labor like Jesus, to follow. In these chapters, he calls the apostles in chapter 10, 1 through 4. He will list off the names of each of the 12 apostles. He calls them to fuller and higher levels of apostleship. And some are called today to leadership. There's the call to endure in chapter 10, 24 through 33. A disciple is not above his teacher, nor a servant above his master. It is enough for the disciple to be like his teacher, and the servant like his master. He goes on in verse 28. He says, Do not fear those who can kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. Rather, fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell. He's talking about the kind of service we should render. He's talking about this call to endure, to fear God. He says, verse 31, Fear not, therefore you are of more value than many sparrows. Whoever will confess or acknowledge me before men, him will I confess or acknowledge before my Father who's in heaven. But whoever denies me before men, him will I deny before before my Father's in heaven. And then he says in verse 34 about, don't think I came to bring peace on the earth. I came to bring a sword and to set a man against those whom are in his own household. And that we're often going to have problems because of following Jesus with those that we are most close to. There's often going to be division in our home because of Jesus. And then he concludes in verse 38 by saying, whoever does not take his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. So after talking about this following him, he's talked about how we've got to endure these persecutions and endure these struggles that he's sending out the disciples to have. And he says, ultimately, it's the call to take up a cross. In the book, the author will make a great statement about this idea of taking up a cross when he speaks about the idea that bearing a cross has little to do with hardships like illness or loss of income. It is all about death. And he's not talking about our physical death, but he's talking about ultimately what Jesus is saying is that it's not just a burden. Yes, we've got to bear a burden, and sometimes there's going to be sacrifices and persecutions that we will have to endure. But ultimately, taking our cross is about taking the instrument of death. It's about dying to our selfish pride. It's about saying, it's not about my will, it's thy will. That following Jesus really means, getting back to what I began with, really is about saying, I can't pick and choose. That I can't just say, Christ, I want to follow you when it's good for me. Christ, I want to follow you in the way that I want to follow you. It's really about dying to self. And so in these three chapters, the emphasis that Jesus is making and Matthew is bringing clear is that we are being invited to follow Jesus. This is our calling. And it's not any kind of audible voice, miraculous thing, but this is what Christ is calling for us. It's what He's calling to the world. Follow me. That's the gospel call that we hear so much in the Gospels, that to take up our cross, to deny ourselves and follow Jesus. But as we look back at these chapters, and we've seen all throughout these chapters that there's this emphasis upon Jesus calling. And notice who He calls. He calls the people who make excuses in chapter 8, 18, 22. He calls people that are tax collectors like Matthew, the sinful person who you never would think would follow Him. He calls laborers, that is hard workers, who will just work. You don't have to be the one who's up in public, maybe doing the prominent role. He calls workers. He calls leaders like the apostles. And He calls all of us to endure and to take a cross. That's our calling. But now, I want you to observe three challenges of this calling of following Jesus in these same chapters. Notice that these stories illustrate that if we're going to follow Jesus, it's going to be tough. And the first thing that we've got to be willing to do is we've got to know that in these stories, Jesus touches the untouchable. He's constantly in His ministry touching and reaching out to the untouchables. Look, for example, in chapter 8. The story, the chapter begins with a leper. And you understand the story about how lepers were unclean underneath the law. There were dangers for your own health in coming in contact with that disease. And one of the biggest problems of being a leper was the social ramifications, that you were isolated from the culture, from family, and you had to make sure others did not come in contact with you. And so that's why there were leper colonies and things like that, where they were put in their own places. And it would cause one to be, number one, open to infection, but secondly, spiritually by the law of Moses, unclean, to touch a leper. And a righteous, religious man like Jesus would never in that culture think of doing what Jesus does. But Jesus isn't a normal person, is He? Jesus, when this leper comes and knelt down before Him, verse 2, and asked, "Lord, if you will, can you make me clean?" Jesus stretched out his hand, touched him. Now, a lot of Jesus' miracles, he does not touch them. A lot of miracles, some miracles he even does from a distance. Often he would just say, but this miracle, he touched him. It may have been because this man had not known physical touch for a long time. And Jesus wanted to show him compassion through a very physical way of touching him. He touched him and says, "I will be clean." And immediately he was cleansed. He changed his life physically and spiritually. He cleansed him. He can now resume fellowship with his family, fellowship with the community of Israel. He was now clean. Jesus touched the untouchable. In chapter 8, 28 through 34, there were two men who were possessed with demons. They had a legion of demons in them. This is recorded as well in Mark, where it only talks about one of these men. And Jesus sends the demons into the pigs. He touched, not physically, but he is going to touch these men by removing the demons from their life. He touched the untouchables. Everybody else had put them out. They were kept in chains and out in the caves. They were kept away from society. But what does Jesus do? Jesus goes out to where the demon-possessed men were, and he healed them. And then in chapter 9, 11 through 13, there's the story of Matthew. Matthew, the tax collector, the last man you would think, remember how tax collectors are looked upon, hated by the Jewish people because they worked for the enemy. They worked for Rome. They had sold out their country. They had sold out their religion. And whom does Jesus call? A tax collector. He's touching the untouchable. And then he says when he goes and eats in Matthew's house, not recorded here, but in other accounts make that plain, as well as like when he goes and eats with Zacchaeus. He's reclined at table in the house, probably Matthew's house, verse 10. And the Pharisees say, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice, for I came not to call the righteous, but sinners." You remember a couple years ago, the Ebola virus was sweeping across Africa. There was many threats even here in the U.S. And remember that the people who were willing to go into Africa and who were fighting that disease and comforting and offering medicine and help and healing to those people, they were all the atheists, right? It was all those radical atheists. No, it wasn't them, was it? It was the Christians who were saying, these people who the world views as untouchable, we still want to love them. Still want to care for them. When you think about missionaries who are going sometimes to very difficult fields, supported by our finances so that they can go, and they often have to minister, and like our children's ministry in El Salvador, or the various works that are being done throughout the Brotherhood in places like India or Africa or Haiti. Very, very difficult areas. Think about what we're trying to do in Graves County with New Pathways for Children. Think about what Ricky and his staff are doing. I mean, those are children who are coming out of very dire circumstances. Sometimes physically, sexually abused. Parents who are wanting to really, in many ways, abandon the responsibilities they have. It's our responsibility, if we're going to follow Jesus, to get involved in those situations. Maybe there are drug and alcohol situations or troubled marriages. If you are going to follow Jesus, it sometimes is going to mean you've got to get messy. You know, we have our farm, and one of the things about it, if you're going to get involved in doing farming with livestock, there's going to be some time that you're going to get messy. You're going to get dirty. If you're going to follow Jesus, it's not always going to be clean. It's going to be difficult, dirty, because you're dealing with sin. Dealing with sin. And Jesus in these stories is reaching out and He's saying that if you're going to follow Me, you've got to be willing to touch the untouchables. You cannot let the culture define who is touchable. That you are supposed to love the people of this world who the world says not to love. We've got to be willing to reach out to the sinners, to the hurting, to the suffering. But number two in these stories, we see that if we're going to follow Jesus, we've got to have trusting faith. If we're going to listen to the call that we're constantly hearing in these chapters, there's an emphasis upon faith. Now, I didn't put all of them in, but notice some of the key ones. Chapter 8, 5 through 13, the story of the centurion. And this man had a servant, and he says, "I'm not even worthy for you to come under my roof to speak the word." And Jesus does, and Jesus compliments the centurion on his faith. In verse number 10, he marveled and said to those who followed him, "Truly I tell you, with no one in Israel have I found such faith." And Jesus says in verse 13 to the centurion, "Go, let it be done to you as you have believed." If we're going to follow Jesus, we've got to believe in Him. If you go down to verse 23 through 27, His disciples are out on the boat. The great storm comes up. Jesus is asleep, and they wake Him up. They say, "Jesus, don't you care that we're perishing?" Verse 26, Jesus says, "Why are you afraid, O you of little faith?" When we're going through the storms of life, we've got to have faith. Jesus says, "O you of little faith." Many times, He probably would say the same thing to us when we're following Him. In chapter 9, 1 through 8, there's the story of the man who had good friends. Because his friends, he's paralyzed. He is lying on a bed. His friends bring him. The house is so crowded. This is the VBS story we did a few years back. House is so crowded that they take the roof off the house. This is available in a flat kind of roof. And they lower him down. Lower him down so that he can get to Jesus. It's about their faith. It's about their trust that Jesus could heal this man. And then in chapter 9, 27 through 31, there's the story of the two blind men who cry out, "Have mercy on us, Son of David." And Jesus would ask them, "Do you believe that I am able to do this?" That's a good question for us as we follow Jesus. Do we believe? Do we trust? When we're praying, when we're involved in the messy situations of life, when we're involved in the storms of life, do we believe that Jesus can do this? The challenge of following Jesus is touching the untouchable. The challenge of following Jesus is having faith when you're going through storms, when you're sick and hurting, when you're struggling. And finally, in these chapters, we find out in chapter 10 primarily, but also some in other chapters, that the challenge of following Jesus is enduring persecutions and sacrifices. Look at chapter 8, 14 through 17. That evening they brought to Him many who were oppressed by demons. He cast out the spirits with the word and healed all who were sick, which was to fulfill what was spoken of by the prophet. Jesus didn't get a break. Think about that. Following Jesus isn't always convenient. You know, we like to categorize sometimes our time. We're going to allocate this much time to work. We're going to give this much time to family. Or we like to break it down. I'm going to give so much time to exercise or this or that. But following Jesus doesn't always go on our time scale. Have you ever noticed that when you're reading through the Gospels, that Jesus often is interrupted in His schedule? That they're always pressing upon Him, and they're always requiring things of Him, and that following Him means that your time schedule is often going to be interrupted. But then, if you look on in verses 18 and following, following Jesus in chapter 8 also involves not making excuses. That sometimes our excuses for our sacrifices and persecutions are really pretty lame. And that we don't need to rationalize away our service. These men were making excuses about why they could not follow Jesus. And they sounded good. I mean, I've got to go bury my dad. And the idea here is that he's got to probably go and provide for them, that they're not yet dead. Certainly we see when in the midst of funerals and in the midst of dying, that Jesus has compassion, like John 11 with the death of Lazarus. So I don't think Jesus is being callous here, but what this man is doing is making an excuse. And Jesus says, you need to let them deal with that, and you need to follow me. You see, we've got to understand that we can't rationalize. If you go on down to chapter 8, 33 through 34, these men, the herdsmen, fled going into the city. They told everything about what had happened with the demon-possessed men. And behold, all the city came out to meet Jesus. And when they saw Him, they begged Him to leave. Now, why did they beg Jesus to leave? He had just healed the two men, cast the demons out. Why did they beg Him to leave? They begged Him to leave, it seems, because Jesus cast their whole herd of swine into the lake. And why is this the case? Why is this? Well, it seems that Jesus hit them in their pocketbooks. He hurt them. It was something that caused them to be like, wow, that's amazing, but I'm not sure I like the outcome. We lost all our pigs. The whole community did. Instead of rejoicing with these two men who had been healed, they're afraid because of the consequences of following Jesus. And they said, Jesus, we beg you, don't stay around here. Leave. It's kind of interesting, isn't it? But they're begging Jesus to leave. Following Jesus means you've got to accept the consequences that comes from following Him. Sometimes there's going to be financial consequences. Sometimes there's going to be, as he talks about in chapter 10, 34 and following, there's going to be family consequences. I didn't come to bring peace but a sword. Sometimes there's going to be tension in your family. He talks in chapter 10 in verses 5 through, I'm not going to read all this, but through 5 through 23, all that the men are going to have to endure when they go out preaching and how they're going to have to deal with that preaching. He even talks about how they're going to be flogged and given over to courts. He says in verse 18, you'll be dragged before governors and kings for my sake. They're going to be persecuted. He said, verse 21, brother will deliver brother over to death, father his child, children will rise against parents to have them put to death. He says, verse 23, they will persecute you in one town, flee to the next, for truly I say to you, you will not have gone through all the towns of Israel before you see the Son of Man coming. You see, he's telling us that we've got to endure problems. As we think about this lesson, and we think about what we've read this week in these chapters, and you think about all these stories that you've read, I want you to understand that these stories are not just, you know, cute Bible class stories. They're not just for children. They're not just VBS stories. These stories about the miracles of Jesus. Matthew recorded all of them by the Holy Spirit to remind us that this is what it means to follow Jesus. This is who Jesus was. He was touching the untouchables. He was demanding true faith. Oh, you have little faith. He was demanding true faith. He marveled at true faith. And he demanded that his followers endure even through the excuses of life, through the burdens of life, even through the division that comes in family, even through physical suffering, to endure. And so we ask the question, will you follow Jesus? And I come back to where I started. We cannot pick and choose. You see, we've got to take that personally. We can't say, well, I like certain parts of following Jesus, but I don't like the other parts. I kind of like the faith, but I don't like the persecution. I like loving the people that are like me, but I don't like going down and dealing with the people that are in jail. I don't like dealing with the people that are on drugs. I don't like trying to love them. Or my neighbor, even, who's not on drugs, he just drives me crazy, and I don't want to deal with him anymore. You see, following Jesus means things like loving our enemies, caring for the misfortunate, loving the poor, even though they make bad decisions, and loving the lost enough to tell them the truth. Will you follow Jesus? If you need to respond to the Lord's invitation, the baptistry is prepared. If you want to put Christ on in baptism, if you want to rededicate your life and confess sins and be restored to Christ, if we can help you in any way, come as together we stand and as we sing.